The headlines: IAEA chief Rafael Grossi says in order for the 2015 Iran deal to be revived in Vienna, the safeguards issues with the agency need to be resolved. Iran's security chief says that Israel is the greatest enemy of the Muslim world in reaction to the Saudi crown prince calling Israel a potential ally. Plus, Russia opens humanitarian corridors, allowing time for civilians to leave two Ukrainian cities. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, says safeguards issues with Iran should be resolved in order for the 2015 deal to be revived. Grossi was speaking at a press conference with the head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization in Tehran. The IAEA chief says his talks with Mohammad Assami were fruitful and intense. Grossi said that there is an understanding that the two sides should work together so that all issues are clarified. Grossi is due to meet with Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian later on Saturday. His Tehran visit comes as Iran and the remaining parties to the 2015 deal continue talks in Vienna to revive the accord. Those talks have now entered their final stage. And Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, calls Israel the biggest enemy of the Muslim world. Shamkhani made the comments in a tweet after the Saudi crown prince talked about the kingdom's relationship with the Israeli regime. Mohammed bin Salman said Riyadh is looking for ways to coexist with Iran, but does not look at Israel as an enemy. He also said that Tel Aviv will probably be an ally of Riyadh in the future. The top Iranian security official also referred to bilateral talks between Tehran and Riyadh. He said that the talks hosted by Iraq stem from Iran's principled strategy of cooperating with its neighbors based on bilateral and regional interests. Those talks are aimed at diffusing tensions over a host of issues, including the Yemen war. Israel and the United Arab Emirates boost their ties further with Abu Dhabi, allowing Tel Aviv to resume a full schedule of flights to the Sheikhdom. Israel's internal spy agency, Shin Bet, says the two sides have settled a dispute over airport security that forced them to cut back air services. Israel's flag carrier has welcomed the announcement, saying it will immediately return to operating up to 4 flights a day. Non-stop flights from Tel Aviv to Dubai were among the issues agreed upon as part of a U.S.-backed normalization deal between Israel and the UAE. The deal was clinched in 2020, drawing strong backlash from Muslims and Palestinians who see the accord as a betrayal of their cause. Hello and welcome to another edition of the News Review. In this edition, the Russian Defense Ministry announces a ceasefire to allow residents of two Ukrainian cities to evacuate. According to a ministry statement, the ceasefire has taken effect on 7 GMT on Saturday. The ministry has not said how long the truce will remain in effect in the two Ukrainian cities that are now surrounded by Russian forces. Russian media say the defense ministry has determined humanitarian corridors and exit points in an agreement with Ukrainian authorities. The truce announcement came after Mariupol's mayor asked for humanitarian corridors, saying his city was under a blockade. Mariupol is about 500,000 population and is a strategic port city. Russia's Foreign Intelligence Service has warned that NATO countries are sending terrorists to Ukraine. The intelligence body says the terrorists have been trained at a U.S.-controlled military base in Syria. The agency also says that U.S. continues to form new terrorist groups in the Middle East and Africa to send them to Ukraine via Poland. In the meantime, the British daily The Times has reported that Western mercenaries are offered $2,000 a day to fight Russia. According to the newspaper, private firms are recruiting former military agents for covert operations against Russian forces inside Ukraine. The Russian Defense Ministry has warned that all foreign mercenaries detained in Ukraine would be brought to justice on criminal charges. Now, to discuss that further, we're joined by Mr. Fred Weir, journalist and political commentator, joining us live from Moscow, and also Mr. Tim Anderson, director for the Central for Counter-Hegemonic Studies out of Sydney. Let's begin with Mr. Weir. Sir, if you could please tell us, Russian officials say that they want to see Ukraine demilitarized. What is meant by demilitarization, and how do you see the possibility of this Russian demand happening down the road?
Well, what they mean by demilitarization is that Ukraine must not align itself to any military bloc in future. The big Russian concern has been for many, many years, the Ukrainian desire or the desire of Ukrainian elites to join NATO. Russia would see NATO in Ukraine as a dagger aimed at its heart. They've said so many times. They've taken this precipitous step now, which is reckless, I think, but that's what's at the heart of it. They want Ukraine not to be ever a military base or launching pad for attacks against Russia. And as for how it can come about, not advocating this in any way, I'm shocked and horrified by what's happening, but a military victory by Russia would put them in a position of reading terms to the Ukrainians. Those would be the terms.
Russia says that the West is grooming mercenary forces in Syria and sending them to fight Ukraine through Poland. What is your assessment of this? Is this going to turn Ukraine into another hotbed for terrorism?
I really can't speak to that. I have no direct knowledge of any of that. The wars these days, 21st century wars, do tend to become these they're no longer like 20th century wars, opposing armies, fight it out on the battlefield and also destroy cities and so on. As horrible as those wars were, this is a new world where all kinds of different forces interact, some covert, some overt. Cyberspace is a big battlefield. So I'm sure that's true. I think it's also true that there are Russian private military contractors involved on the ground. There, the Wagner Group is active. This creates pandemonium in Ukraine. Another thing that is probably going to turn out to have been a terrible mistake is the Ukrainian government's decision to arm the population. They are distributing weapons in major cities, basically without verifying the person and handing out rifles and grenade launchers and such to people who have no military experience whatsoever. This is a formula for chaos.
Thank you very much. Mr. Tim Anderson, the previous experience with using mercenary forces in battlefields has not been successful. They are barely accountable. They have extremist tendencies. They hinder peace efforts, and eventually their presence turns into a puzzle for the host countries, not knowing what to do with them. What is your take?
Well, yes, we've seen over a decade of the so-called moderate rebels in Syria recruited from all around the world, extremists, as we know, but covered for by the NATO-aligned media. And we've got something very similar happening here in the sense that ever since the 2014 coup in Kiev, there has been the growth of state-associated paramilitaries, specifically overtly neo-Nazi, and then some other less formal groups in there, as your previous guest said. We know from reports that there has been training in Ukraine's major military facility of extreme right-wing characters. This is precisely what the Russians are reacting to now. They know that the Azov battalion, for example, was taking the lead in attacking the Eastern Republics, the Russian-speaking people of that area, and they're engaged with them now in cities like Mariupol, for example. So there's certainly a great deal of proxy forces that Ukraine government itself and also NATO, which has been arming those paramilitaries. I might add that Israel has also been arming those neo-Nazi paramilitaries there for strategic reasons. So it could be a very dirty war we're seeing, and hopefully there'll be some negotiated solution before that goes on too long.
Thank you very much to both of you. That was Mr. Fred DeWeer, journalist and political commentator out of Moscow, and Mr. Tim Anderson, director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies out of Sydney. Thanks to both of you gentlemen, and thanks to all of you for following this edition of the News Review. China says that it seeks peaceful ties with Taiwan, but will not tolerate foreign interference there.
We will advance the peaceful development of cross-strait relations and the reunification of the motherland. We firmly oppose any separatist activities seeking Taiwan independence and firmly oppose foreign interference. Compatriots on both sides of the Taiwan Strait should join hands to help each other to create the glorious cause of national rejuvenation.
The official was speaking at an annual meeting of China's parliament. He said the country is fully committed to the One China principle and the 1992 consensus. Back then, the two sides agreed that there is only one sovereign state under the name of China, and Taiwan is part of that. Based on that principle, China is opposed to Taiwan seeking independence and rejects military support for the island. The U.S., however, has increased its military support over the past months, raising tensions with China. And reactions are pouring in following a deadly suicide bombing that devastated a Shia mosque in northwestern Pakistani city of Peshawar on Friday. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres condemned the bombing. He said places of worship should be safe havens, not targets of attacks. Iraq's top Shia cleric Ayatollah al-Sistani denounced the tragic incident too. He called on Islamabad to tackle terrorist groups and not allow them to commit crimes against innocent people, especially religious minorities. Iran said the attack was aimed at sowing discord among Muslims, and the European Union slammed the bombing as a heinous crime. The blast targeted worshippers during Friday prayers, killing nearly 60 people and injuring dozens more. Daesh terrorist group claimed responsibility for that attack. To discuss that further, we're joined by Said Mohsin Abbas, journalist and political commentator. Thank you very much, sir, for joining us. Now, the question is, are we facing the resurgence of terrorism in Pakistan?
Well, it's never gone away, that's the truth. I are a major player in that region to create the terrorism. And of course, there are like, for instance, the Al-Jundala, the Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan, PPP, just three examples of very potent, terrorist organizations that are operating in full view sometimes and very, very clandestinely. And of course, the latest attack is just one of many. I mean, I documented, for instance, 77 attacks by the IS Khorasan in Afghanistan, where they've primarily been bombing, although Tajikistan and Pakistan have cleared operation areas for them as well. 77 attacks were launched in the first four months of 2021. And it's not unknown that they target even children. I mean, in Kabul, there was a car bomb that hit 85 people who were killed, but it was actually 300 others injured, and it was a girls' school that they were targeting. So you see, they're very ruthless. Their origins are traced to 2015, when they apparently broke away from the Taliban mainstream with a very hard-line ideology, and for them the Taliban weren't hard enough in terms of Sharia or any of the ideological side of things. But what's really been a game changer, and where the US, for instance, and even the Zionists and RAW, the Indian agencies, are implicated, is that there was a huge influx of around 5,000 to 10,000 fighters from Iraq and Syria that joined the IS Khorasan ranks and swelled them. And since then, they've been the primary thorn in the side of now, of course, Taliban, but of course the Pakistan intelligence services, who've been doing huge operations to keep them under control. I mean, this one, of course, has slipped through, but Pakistan is in a full-time exercise. I mean, they really are under the head of the Pakistan Army, Brigadier Bajwa. They've actually been mopping up most of these forces. They've actually also helped the Afghan Taliban Red Unit defeat them in Dar Zarb province. That was a major part of destroying IS Khorasan and their efforts to disrupt the changeover of Afghanistan to Taliban hands at that time. So they've been playing a role, and the allegation is that actually clandestinely America, you know, along with, you know, the likes of the CIA, Mossad and RAW are all in this. And their primary objective is to destroy the Belt and Road Initiative, to sabotage Pakistan's alliance in the Eurasian axis of Iran, China, Russia, and others in that region. And this seems to be the main purpose of the IS Khorasan, is basically to act as a threat to Pakistan in its leadership, that if you don't follow our master's line, and the master's being, of course, the Anglo-Zionist Empire, then we will cause terrorist activities across your region. This is the nutshell of it, I think.
Thank you very much. That was Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, joining us live from London. And that brings us to the end of another edition of World News.
Stay tuned.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
departure.
If you agree with me that travel is most rewarding when it surprises, then Iran might just be the most rewarding destination on Earth. By having lush, dense forests in the north, warm, sunny beaches in the south by the Persian Gulf, snowy mountains in the west, and amazingly hot deserts in the east, Iran is one of the few countries that gives the joy of experiencing four different seasons at the same time to travelers. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. With an area of 1.6 million square kilometers, Iran is the 18th largest country in the world and the second largest in the Middle East. Its area roughly equals the area of France, Spain, and Germany together. Iran's diverse and striking landscapes offer a wealth of breathtaking and spectacular views to discover. This week on Aperture's Iran Trotter series, Javad Gharayi will go to Bahu Kalat in the south of Iran, where the turquoise waters meet the hot sand of the desert. Here's the first part.
The living world is filled with unparalleled beauties, beauties represented by Mother Nature across this beautiful planet. A planet that's been the only habitat for humans since they came into being millions of years ago. The beauties of nature have forever captivated humans everywhere. Many of what humans have created over millennia were inspired by their natural environment. To many humans, the word nature conjures up images of mountains and forests, but nature has thousands of other beautiful facets, and some of those facets manifest themselves in sharp contrast to each other. One of the most beautiful faces of Mother Nature is the barren areas of land, or deserts. Many nature explorers believe that deserts and steppes are the most beautiful parts of nature, and the most beautiful parts of these parts are the sand dunes and hills. But is there anywhere in the world with expanses of shifting dry sand dunes right next to a great body of salt water named the sea? Hi, I'm Javad Gharayi. I'm an Iran trotter, and I'm taking you on a journey to the most pristine areas of this beautiful land. Chile is a beautiful country with unique natural exquisiteness,
A country that remarkably has vast steppes and shifting sand dunes along the coast of the Pacific Ocean, offering a natural scene of unparalleled beauty. Of course, I haven't traveled to Chile's beautiful Pacific coast. My destination is the Bahu Kalat rural district in the south of Iran's Sistan and Baluchistan province. But I'm not going straight to Bahu Kalat. I begin my trip near the border between Hormozgan and Sistan and Baluchistan provinces. There are few places in the world where sand dunes meet the sea, creating a spectacular landscape. Such coastal deserts can only be seen in parts of Chile, in the Great African Sahara, and in the Southwest African country of Namibia. Some may find it hard to believe, but in addition to those few places in the world, there is an area in southern Iran where expansive sand fields meet the Sea of Oman. A place near the village of Darak in Zaravan County. The border between Sistan and Baluchistan and Hormozgan provinces, in the southernmost area of Baluchistan, on the coast of the Sea of Oman. In the past, this area of Iran was called Mukran, a name researchers say was derived from the word muk, meaning the palm tree. Given its large number of palm groves, Baluchistan can be referred to as the land of palm groves in Iran, an area with a beautiful history and peerless natural splendor. Unfortunately, the general public in Iran doesn't know much about Baluchistan. The sea, the sand dunes, and the Martian mountains, all in one place, provide an environment with no parallel in Iran and, I dare say, in the world. But the sand dunes, the Martian mountains, and the Sea of Oman aren't the only things that make this area of Baluchistan unique. It's the multitudes of palm and other trees scattered along this area, as well as the many herds of camels, goats, and sheep grazing among these dunes and mountains that make for breathtaking beauty. Here, Mother Nature has made all her efforts to create some of the most beautiful coastal sceneries in the world, and she's done a great job. This is the result of millions of years of work for Mother Nature. So it's incumbent upon us and the authorities to keep these unmatched beauties just as they are, by not allowing any structures, however small, to be built here or in the surrounding area. Not even a few gazebos for tourists and explorers to use. We have to preserve this natural magnificence as it is. A geopark is a unified area that advances the protection and use of geological heritage in a sustainable way and promotes the economic well-being of the people who live in it. Geoparks are protected areas. Many countries dream of having one in its smallest and simplest shape and form. There are only a few geoparks around the world that are both geomorphologically rich and boast unique wildlife, history, culture, and indigenous populations. Countries with such wealth are few and far between. But this area of Balochistan is home to several morphological splendors. It's also inhabited by Baluch tribes of a rich culture. Their traditional lifestyle and time-honored customs, a pure, unspoiled natural environment, the preserved remains from the remote past, the golden sandy coastlines, and the deep turquoise blue waters of the Sea of Oman. The traditional fishing apparatus on boats moored at a beautiful port, and finally, very good vegetation and animal life. As I walk on beautiful sand hills, I think to myself, how are we responsible to the generations that will come into being in this country, to the natural beauties in our country? I'm spending today relishing the stunning untapped natural beauties in Zaravan and snapped several beautiful pictures. The nagging question is, do we have the right to deny the children of tomorrow the opportunity to feast their eyes on such spectacular scenery? I wish no structure, no roads, nothing would be built among these ancient mountains, sand dunes, and palm groves. No hotels, no themed amusement parks to be built for human recreation on its untouched coastline. Even a few simple gazebos in the area can accelerate the destruction of this region's ecology and natural landscape. I wish all of us humans had more appreciation for the natural world, this manifestation of God Almighty's beauty, and paid it due respect. I wish all nature-loving tourists would choose to walk into the heart of nature, and by doing so prevented any harm to it. A lot of people in the world think that if they really want to enjoy their expedition into nature, they have to spend the nights in multi-star hotels near their destinations. But that's not the right mentality. It's not in anyone's interests. Hotels that are built close to natural habitats do nothing but damage an intricate ecology that's taken millennia to be formed. There's an alternative way for explorers to both enjoy their trips into the heart of nature and for the natural world to be spared damage by humans. In other words, for humans to forge a partnership with the natural world. Local homes, kapars, and black tents, and also camping tents are the best options. All the people and officials in this area of Balochistan say they hope that in the near future, the area they live in will be registered as an important and valuable geopark by the relevant authorities living in the capital city. And by doing so, they hope the unique natural environment here and the culture and customs of the old Baluch tribes inhabiting this region will be preserved and protected. I take great pleasure walking about in this beautiful natural landscape and accompanying camel herders, but this is the end of this leg of my journey. I have to set off for my main destination, the Bahu Kalat district in the north of Balochistan. The main purpose of this trip is to visit an idyllic little village by the name of Shir Gawaz, a lush, vast, green patch of land 30 kilometers to the border with Pakistan. The name Shir Gwaz was derived from the names of two wild animals, namely the lion and the boar. The locals here tell me this area is home to wild boars, but no one has ever sighted any trace of lions here or anywhere in Iran, unless in the very distant past. Perhaps what ancient Shir Gwaz inhabitants meant by the word lion was in fact the wolf or hyena. That's because those two species have lived in this region for hundreds of years. But what has brought me to this area of Baluchistan wasn't the lion or the boar. I've come here to see the Asian crocodile. Parlance, the rare species of crocodile is called the Gondo. They live somewhere between River Sarbaz, Bahu Kalat, and Shir Gwaz. The river is the biggest natural stream of water in Baluchistan. It is known by different names by the locals living in villages located along its 300-kilometer course, monikers such as Sarbaz, Bahu Kalat, and Shir Gwaz. My team and I have to walk a long distance to see one of those short-nosed crocodiles. But these gorgeous, thick-skinned aquatic reptiles in Iran are said to be very shy animals, making it difficult for us to find one. What that means is you can't get too close to these amphibians and admire their beauty at close range. We have been going about gunning for a crocodile for a couple of hours now, but we haven't been able to see even one just yet. As I say, they are very shy animals. The locals tell me I'd be lucky to see one, though they also say if you wait long enough, you'll definitely be able to see at least one. Guy is around 3 meters long. The people in this area call them the Gondo. Who would have thought that you could see Gondos, the short-nosed Asian crocodiles, in a river in Iran's Sistan and Baluchistan province? At their biggest, these majestic reptiles are 3.5 meters long. The primary habitats of the short-nosed Asian crocodile are in Iran, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and Myanmar. The people of Shir Gwaz tell me the best place to see the Gondos is the Shir Gwaz Dam, a barrier built across the Shir Gwaz River to impound its water. The number of crocodiles living in Iran has been estimated at between 300 and 400. The good news is the people of Sistan and Baluchistan do not do anything to endanger the survival of these adorable reptiles. The bond between them is unshakable. In general, the Baluch are kind, nature-loving human beings, traits that are rooted in these noble people's culture and creed. The love of nature and of animals is part of the life and culture of the Baluch people. Animals are part of the family, among them wild animals. Probably if this were another city or country, many people would try and, man, this guy is strong. I bet if I let him go, he's definitely gonna break my bones or break my camera into pieces. As I was saying, If this mountain goat were anywhere other than here, without a doubt, some heartless poacher would have gunned it down by now. But the people here love animals dearly. The gondos that we saw earlier, they're conserving them so well. Also, this wild goat, that's very close to the hearts of the people here. You can see many peacocks, partridges, and pheasants in the households here in Shir Gwaz, and also in other villages elsewhere in Balochistan. The Shir Gwaz River flows past Bahu Kalad village, providing the hard-working community here with water for their farms, fruit groves, and animals. Perhaps there are many people in Iran who are unaware that the fruits grown in Balochistan can only be farmed in tropical climates. But that's exactly what's happening in this province. All of the Iranian banana produce comes from this region. Bahu Kalad is also among the important producers of watermelons in Iran. The cold season is when the watermelons grown here are harvested and distributed across the country. I've just stepped into a fruit grove in Bahu Kalad. In my opinion, this is a veritable piece of heaven. Here, you can see several different species of fruits right next to each other. Something you may not be able to see anywhere else in Iran. Fruits such as bananas, dates, mangoes, papaya, all kinds of citrus fruits. I've also been told that even coffee is farmed in some of the gardens here. It's just wonderful. I mean, you could go so far as calling this place Little India, located in southwestern Iran.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa, via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. Or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is this
for
is,
a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Thank you for tuning in and for following our episodes and for being with us. Inshallah, in this episode, I'm going to discuss with you some important verses about man's superiority and man's attributes. Those are attributes which are quite essential and quite critical for man to live a better life. And we are in this program for a better life. As you know, man is distinguished from other creatures not only through the power of intellect, but he has also, as I said in one of the previous episodes, God has placed and has blown his spirit into him, so he is superior to other creatures. And more importantly, and also, of course, instead of saying more importantly, I would say that another important attribute of the human being is that man is completely free to choose his destiny, to shape his life and his fate. In other words, man is the master of his own fate. And this is how the Holy Quran presents the idea of man's destiny. You know, there is the light of guidance. And however, one is free to take it or not to take it, you know. The Quran presents this idea of one's destiny and fate. It says in verse 3 of chapter 76, "Surely we have shown him the way. He may be grateful or ungrateful." So this was verse 3 of chapter 76 is a verse which shows that man is free. He can be grateful or ungrateful. He is not forced to be grateful, because if he is compelled in his being grateful, then there's no use, there's no benefit. And he is not to be blamed for his actions. He is not to be held responsible for his actions, because he is compelled in whatever he does. Then divine reward and divine justice and also the resurrection entirely would be meaningless. They would be irrelevant. And so, dear brothers and sisters, to be thankful as human beings, because we are supposed to be thankful. Thankfulness is an important act of worship. We should always be thankful to Allah for giving us His blessings, for bestowing His rahmah and His compassion and mercy upon us, and for all the bounties that Allah has placed in front of us. To be thankful does not mean to just say shukran lillah, okay, or thanks be to Allah. We should thank God for having given us, for having actually shown us the right path, and for having given us innumerable blessings and bounties without expecting anything from us. Let's open our real eyes and see for ourselves His endless blessings around us, you know. Whatever we have within us and whatever we have without us, you know, around ourselves, are all manifestations of divine blessings. Dear brothers and sisters, being thankful to Allah is not based on just, you know, mere utterances or saying subhanallah, shukran lillah, you know. We should try to use His blessings in such a way that we get closer to Him further by the light of His benevolence. We should use God's blessings in the right way, in the most appropriate way. And that's one way of being thankful to Allah, you know. Of course, God has given us the eyes, the different faculties, and we must use these faculties in the right way. And we should understand that these are the faculties that Allah has given to us. They are not ours. They are Allah's, you know, property in the first place. If we have a beating heart in our chest, that's Allah that, you know, helps the heart continuously beat and keep the body alive, you know. So we must use every blessing that Allah has given us in the right way. Let's have a break. We will be back.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Both man and jinn have been bestowed the freedom to choose their way and their style of life. You know, as we know, no other creatures have such a choice except jinns. The jinn have the freedom to believe or disbelieve. You know, just as they disbelieved Allah, Iblis was, you know, one of those jinns that did not accept Allah's command, did not surrender himself to Allah's, you know, command. And he disobeyed Allah, and he chose to disobey Allah. You know, but you know, the level of perfection that jinns can reach is lower than that of man, than the level that man can reach. And of course, based on this principle, on this assumption, jinn must follow the prophets who have been sent to the human masses. They are also supposed to follow Allah. Every creature that has been created by Allah must follow God and must follow the teachings of the prophet. The jinns are also supposed to follow. And jinn, like all human beings, have all the biological functions. They reproduce like all living beings, according to some scholars. Their physical structure differs from, you know, man. They are not physical in their nature. Their bodies are light. They are not, you know, three-dimensional. Jinns can easily move about. They can walk through walls, you know, and they can penetrate everywhere. They are able to move from one part of the universe to other parts very easily, without any efforts. Jinns, you know, can take the forms of animals, humans, and anything, but, you know, their creation lacks that ultimate potentiality of perfection with which mankind has been endowed. So that's why we are saying, and based on the Quranic conception, a man, he has all the potentiality of perfection. He has the ability to change his life, to make his life better and better and better, and to get as close to Allah as the angels. And even when we compare human beings with the angels, the human beings are far better and far superior than the angels, because angels are compelled in their behavior. They are compelled in their behavior. So it is only humans who bear the divine trust and fulfill the goal of perfection. Only humans. Inna aradna al-amanata ala samawati wal-ard. You know, we offer the trust to the heavens and the earth and the mountains, but they refused to carry it and were afraid of it. And man carried it. So surely he is very unjust, very ignorant. وَحَمَلَهَا الْإِنسَانِ إِنَّهُ كَانَ ظَلُومًا جَهُولًا. So, the responsibility was carried by men. No other creatures, the mountains, the animals, and whatever creatures that you can think of, could not take that responsibility to become God's vicegerent on earth. Only man, because of his ignorance, because he was unjust, because of his ignorance, because he was ignorant, accepted it. And he has the capacity to, of course, to become God's vicegerent on earth. So, brothers and sisters, we have run out of time. That's all for this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.